Good afternoon. It's 12:06 and time for another edition of Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY 89.1 FM. Hope you join today's conversation by giving us a call at 260-452-1185. Post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia. My co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman, is out today, but he'll be back next week. Today, we're focusing our conversation on the colon cancer, colonoscopies, prevention, and surgical treatment. And to do that, we have Dr. Nadine Floyd from the Lutheran Health Network here to help answer any questions and comments that you may have. Dr. Floyd, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So the colon is something that a part of the body we haven't really gotten to on Health 360 today, or in general, so I'm really excited to be kind of finally reaching that part of the body to have a good conversation about it. So let's just start off with the basics. What does the colon do, and why is it important to have a healthy one?
Well, I tell many of the patients that I see that it's a social organ. It stores things until we have the time to take care of them and eliminate them as needed. Most of the digestion of the food that we eat and the absorption of all of that, those nutrients, has already been completed before it gets to the colon. So really, it's sort of our waste treatment center, so to speak.
And how do we make sure that we keep having a healthy colon, and why is that important?
Well, certainly making sure we drink a lot of water and fluids, and then healthy green leafy vegetables, high fiber grains, whole grains, fruits and vegetables. Those are the main things to sort of help sweep things through the colon so that things move very smoothly for you.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking a little bit before the show started today about colon cancer and how it used to be considered either the second or third most diagnosed type of cancer, but recently it's kind of gone down the list, which is good news. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Colon cancer in some studies has been second to breast cancer in women and second to prostate cancer in men. However, in recent years, we've seen where lung cancer and skin cancer have been more prevalent than colon cancer. And the thought is that this is related to the screening processes that we have in place and people avoiding colon cancer by getting those screenings.
So let's dive right into colon cancer. What is it? And we'll kind of go through the process of the signs, symptoms, but let's start off by defining what colon cancer is.
So colon cancer often starts as a small growth called a polyp, and that's usually considered precancerous. And then over time, as that polyp grows in size, it can become more invasive. And so any cancer that's occurring any place in the colon or the rectal area would be defined as colon cancer. There are different types, but the main type starts in the actual inner lining of the colon.
Who is eligible to get colon cancer? What do most of your patients look like? Is there a type of person that's more susceptible to it?
I've seen colon cancer in people from the ages of 17 to 99, so it can strike anybody. But it's most common in folks who are in their 6th or 7th decade or in their 60s or 70s. But obviously it can strike younger ages. And so our guidelines for screening are for those patients who are at the age of 50 or over. Mm-hmm. But if you have a family history of a young person having cancer, then you're going to want to start your screening sooner.
I was going to jump into family history. That plays a major role in a lot of different types of cancer, and I imagine that colon cancer is no exception.
Yes, but it's really only a factor in less than 20% of colon cancers. So that means 80% of people who get colon cancers have no family history. They have no risk factors. And so this really can strike randomly at anybody in society.
Well, what are some of the signs and symptoms that you might be have colon cancer?
One of the things about colon cancer is it can often mimic a lot of other problems that are not cancer in the colon. For example, rectal bleeding can be something else, something like hemorrhoids. And so oftentimes people will ignore that sign thinking, well, it's just my hemorrhoids. Constipation, diarrhea, cramping, or discomfort of the abdomen. All of those things can be non-cancerous problems, but they can also be cancer. And so what I usually advise patients is if you've had a change, if you don't normally have those symptoms and now you have them, you need to speak to your healthcare provider.
260-452-1185 is the number to call. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm. We're devoting the whole hour today of Health 360 to the health of the colon, from colon cancer to colonoscopies to prevention and surgical treatments. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and my guest today is Dr. Nadine Floyd, who is here to help answer any of your questions. Again, that number, 260-452-1185. The phone lines are wide open if you do have a question or a comment. So we've talked a little bit about some of the symptoms, and is there any underlining major reasons as to why their colon cancer exists, what some of the causes are, habits to avoid in one's daily life?
Well, that's sort of the million-dollar question. You know, cancer, again, strikes sometimes when we least expect it. Mm-hmm. We do know that smoking contributes to all cancers, but it's been shown to promote colon cancer. There's a lot of studies right now looking at obesity, increasing our risk for colon cancer. And then certainly our diet, red meats and diets that have more refined and processed foods as opposed to whole grains and leafy green vegetables and fruits are more prone to see the colon cancer rates in those communities.
Does gender seem to be playing a role in the types of people that are walking into your door?
In general, no. I have seen data where men are slightly more at risk, but I wonder if that's because the women are more likely to get their screening.
We're going to get to screening in a little bit here. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. And we actually have Tony on line one who has a question related to colon cancer. Tony, welcome to Midday Matters Health 360.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. My name's Tony. I'm 44, and about 6 months ago I had a colonoscopy where they took about 6 or 7 polyps out of my intestine. And they said they checked those, and they weren't cancerous. My question was, I believe your guest said that the polyps were considered cancer. Is that correct? And I'll listen offline.
Thanks.
To clarify, they can be precancerous. And whenever we remove a polyp, we ask a pathologist to look at it. And there are two types of polyps. Hyperplastic polyps, in general, are thought to be less likely to be precancerous polyps. But then there is another subset of polyps called adenomatous or villous adenomatous or even serrated adenomas. And these are thought to be precancer. And so what that means is that if that polyp had not been removed, it could have gone on to become a cancer.
Okay. So when one is getting screened and if a polyp is found, it's analyzed and then the decision, they're not always removed, is that correct, or are they usually always removed?
In general, we try to remove them. Okay. There can be various reasons why they may not be removed, and usually your physician will talk to you afterwards. Certainly a very large polyp that cannot be removed safely through a colonoscopy may need to be removed surgically.
If you have a question or comment, you can post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or you can send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm, and you can always give us a call, 260-452-1185. There's a little bit of a stigma and maybe some embarrassment when it comes to this area of the body and going in to get screenings if you think that you have some of the symptoms for colon cancer. What would you say to some of those folks that are maybe a little bit embarrassed and kind of think, okay, well, I'll just keep pushing this on and off? What would you say to those folks that maybe either have these symptoms or they have a family member that they're trying to coax into getting screened?
Well, the good news is everybody does it. but certainly a lot of people come from a more private background or where this is embarrassing. Usually by the chance I get to see somebody, they've overcome the hardest part, which is picking up the phone and making the appointment. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking to family members or to a loved one whom you're really concerned about that they need to get their cancer screening, what I tell people is that the actual screening process itself, particularly colonoscopy, it's not as public as they're concerned. Mm. You know, we keep people covered up. They are sedated so that they don't have to watch or feel anything. And the process itself in front of other people is kept very dignified and very private. The hard part for many people that they are concerned about is the clean out. They've all heard about the clean out from one of their friends. And what I tell folks is we have to flush the colon clean in order for us to get a good look. Mm-hmm. And so drinking the prep the day before to clean out the bowel for many people has a lot of anxiety, and we have a lot of good ways of doing that now, and I find that most patients do a really good job of tolerating it, so it's not as awful as maybe it had been a few decades ago, because we have some preps that are a little bit easier to tolerate.
Mm-hmm. And let's go ahead and dive right into the different types of screening. I'm sure, is the colonoscopy the most common one? It's one that I've certainly heard the most about.
We call it the gold standard.
Okay.
And the reason is because we can remove polyps at the same time. Mm. The detection rate for polyps with colonoscopy is better than the blood testing that some people have had through their doctor's offices or health screenings, where you get a sample of stool and put it on a card and then they test it for blood. And a lot of people don't like the idea of doing that because it can be a little bit dirty. Mm-hmm. But what that is testing for is blood, and it's very nonspecific, meaning it's really not testing for polyps or cancer. But more importantly, it's also not removing polyps that can become cancerous. So colonoscopy, back to that question, is really considered the gold standard because we can remove the polyps at the same time as we're seeing them. Mm. There are other ways of screening, radiology tests, and there's several of them. One is a barium enema, and the other one is a CT colonography, which is something that's been more developed in the last few years. Both of these radiology tests require you to clean out your bowel. And then you undergo the radiology test, and if they see something, then you have to go on to get a colonoscopy, and it cannot be done the same day. Mm. So for many people where it's an issue of convenience and not wanting to have to clean out their colon more than once, the colonoscopy makes the most sense because you can accomplish removing precancerous lesions at the same time as checking for them.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about some of the day before. If you're somebody that has maybe some signs and symptoms of colon cancer and you want to go undergo a colonoscopy, what do you need to do the day before? You mentioned drinking water, not eating as well?
This is true for anybody, even somebody who's screening who doesn't have symptoms, and we should probably talk about mm-hmm. that in a few seconds. But anybody who's undergoing a colonoscopy, we ask them to modify their diet so that it's just a liquid diet the day before. And then usually in the late afternoon or early evening, we have you start drinking a solution that helps to clean out the bowel. And depending on the time of your procedure the next day, sometimes that's split so that some of it's done the night before and some of it's done the morning before. Or if you have a real early morning appointment, then you would do it all at night. But the key is you want to keep drinking water because you don't want to become dehydrated. And we do allow you to eat things like Jell-O and broth and other liquid food so that you're not truly starving that day. Mm-hmm. You just might be missing your sandwich.
Right. And so you've kind of undergone the liquid diet. You get to the doctor's office. What are some of the things you're going to experience that day?
Well, most people have these done in an endoscopy center or at a hospital facility. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to your doctor's office, you're probably not getting a colonoscopy that day. So just clarify when you're making your appointment. When you arrive, they're going to give you an IV. We're going to monitor you with your heart rate and blood pressure and give you some oxygen to wear, just because we're going to give you medication that relaxes you. For most patients, they're not given a general anesthetic, so they are breathing on their own, and it is relatively safe. But we are monitoring you because we want you to be sleeping so that you don't have any memory or any discomfort during the procedure. Mm-hmm. And then once you're nice and relaxed is when we do the actual colonoscopy. And a colonoscopy, on average, takes between 20 and 30 minutes to have it performed. Mm-hmm.
And walk us through that step. What is happening to our bodies while we're kind of hopefully sedated and not going to, kind of like when you get your wisdom teeth taken out, you just kind of get to go to sleep, and when you come to, the wisdom
it's
teeth
all
are
over.
Gone. Yeah.
Yes. We use a flexible camera, and I tell people it's smaller than a garden hose. And, you know, we insert it through the rectum, and then we pass it all the way until where the small intestine meets the colon. And that's where the appendix is in most people. And so once we've reached that point, then we've seen the entire colon. And we try to do that as smoothly as possible so that it's not very crampy. Mm-hmm. And then on the way out is when we make sure that we look behind all the little folds and turns. And if we see any polyps, we remove them at that point.
Mm-hmm. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. We're spending the whole hour today talking about the colon, colon cancer, risk factors, symptoms of colon cancer, how to treat it, and just general health of the colon today. 260-452-1185 is that number. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with more of Health 360 in just a few moments.
At a retirement community in Bakersfield, California, an elderly woman collapsed, struggling to breathe. A nurse called 911, and the dispatcher begged her or anyone to start CPR. The nurse refused, saying it was against company policy, and the woman died. I'm Lynn Neary, life as a 911 dispatcher. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
You help pay for public education in Indiana, but from the Capitol to the classroom, the payback isn't always clear. You can find out how the state's policy impacts your family in our new State Impact Indiana Project, a local national collaboration between Indiana public broadcasting stations and NPR. You can hear the stories during Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition on NIPR, and dig deeper with a click on the State Impact logo at nipr.fm.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, ensuring children and youth have opportunities and skills to succeed in school and life. UnitedWayAllenCounty.org/education.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Cameron Memorial Community Hospital, providing health and wellness services in the spirit of charity, concern, and excellence, serving Steuben County and surrounding areas. Information at CameronMCH.com.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY 89.1 FM. The time is 12:24. Question or comment? Give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio this afternoon with Dr. Nadine Floyd. We're talking about the colon all throughout this hour, colon cancer, signs, symptoms, and treatments, and just general health of the colon. If you have any questions, again, that number, 260-452-1185. We have a caller on line one. George, welcome to Health 360 Midday Matters.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for the doctor. I am one of the 47 million uninsured people out there, and I am 53 years old. I know at age 50 you need a colonoscopy. How do I do this at the most economical way possible? Do we have pro bono work? Do we have cash discount rate? How do I get this done? I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, I'd hate to have somebody say, oh, if you would have came 2 years ago, we would have got the polyp before it became cancerous. Mm.
Thank you. That's a great question. I'm going to answer it in two parts. First of all, you can get screening without getting the colonoscopy. That is less expensive than a colonoscopy. And we had kind of talked about that before. The x-ray tests like a barium enema Usually runs somewhere between $300 and $400 cash up front. Now, obviously not everybody can pay for that, but most of the hospitals in town have, a program where you can apply for financial assistance. The CT colonoscopy or the virtual colonoscopy is more expensive. So if somebody's looking for an economical way to do this, the barium enema can be done very economically. Then if it shows something abnormal, you're going to feel like it's worth it to come up with the money for the colonoscopy at that point. Colonoscopies in their total average about $3,000, and that includes the hospital facility fees, the nurses, and the doctor's fees. Most doctors do have pro bono work. I work through Neighborhood Health Clinic. I know some of my colleagues work through Matthew 25. So most of us will do that on a financial need basis. So if you make more money, you pay a little bit more than the person who doesn't. Mm-hmm. But we have no control over the facilities. And so usually I tell my patients, let's shop around. Let's see which facility in town offers the best deal, and then I do it at those locations. And I know that all of the hospitals do offer that that assistance. There's also been some recent work in DNA testing of stool. And I talk about this a little bit hesitantly because some of the tests that were available are no longer available. Mm-hmm. But that DNA testing, they're trying to get it to be about $300. And what you do is you send in a stool sample that tests for DNA that marks for polyps and cancer specifically. This is different than the test that marks for blood. And I want to make that distinction because a lot of people will think, well, I went to a free health screen and they tested my stool and it didn't have blood in it. And while that can be very reassuring, it does not mean that you don't have a polyp or a precancerous lesion. It just means that you don't have blood in your stool. Mm-hmm. So don't be falsely reassured by those tests, although it's at least a step. If you have blood in that sample, then you're probably going to pursue doing something else to look into it.
So it sounds like a good first step is to maybe call some of the local hospitals or some of the local health clinics here, and kind of, like you said, see what the rates are, see what the programs are available for those folks that are uninsured.
Exactly.
One thing I wanted to make sure that we follow up on before we move ahead on our conversation, you talked a little bit about at the end of the colonoscopy, when we're retracting the scope, is that the correct term to?
Sure.
Okay. That's when you're kind of double checking for the polyps. And if you find one, you can remove one right then. Is that a painful process?
Not at all. Actually, the air that we use to inflate the colon is more uncomfortable than actually removing a polyp. Mm. We use very small instruments, and the inner lining of the bowel does not have any sensation to it. So when we remove a polyp, there's absolutely no pain whatsoever to the patient.
Good to know. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio this afternoon by Dr. Nadine Floyd, and we're talking about the colon cancer, signs, symptoms, and what you can do to have a healthy colon. So we've talked a little bit about those folks that may think that they are in, more of an immediate need for a colonoscopy or some kind of screening because they have some of the symptoms of colon cancer. But you mentioned 50 is about the age that folks should start getting screened regardless. Is that?
Yes. If you have symptoms, it doesn't matter what your age mm-hmm. is. And it doesn't matter if you had a colonoscopy 3 years ago. If something has changed, you need to speak to your healthcare provider. But if you've had no problems and you have no strong family history, then we recommend people start screening at the age of 50. Mm-hmm. There is some data showing that in the African American and Hispanic communities, they should start at age of 40. And that's because those ethnic groups tend to have more advanced cancers at younger ages. Mm-hmm. But in general, 50 or 40 for those ethnic groups. And then we recommend colonoscopies every 10 years, provided that there's no family history and that there's no polyps or risk factors found at the time of the initial colonoscopy.
Okay. So we've talked a little bit about how people should prepare. Are there any risk factors at all for colonoscopies? Should folks be concerned at all when undergoing this procedure?
It is an invasive procedure, and all invasive procedures do have complications. The good thing is the risk of a complication is relatively low. One of the more common complications is bleeding, and that's usually in a patient who has had a polyp removed or a biopsy performed. The chance of bleeding is less than 1 in 100 patients, and it's usually those patients who take a blood thinner. And if you're going to speak to your provider about getting a colonoscopy, the ones that we often forget about, not just the prescribed medications for blood thinners, but aspirin, and some people worry about our herbal supplements that have vitamin E in them can put you at risk for bleeding. The other complication that is much more serious but less common is perforation or poking a hole into the bowel. And they say that that can happen anywhere between 1 in 4 to 7,000 procedures. So it's a pretty low risk, less than 1%. However, if it does happen, I often tell my patients who are doing this for screening, it really messes up your weekend plans. So you want to do this, you know, not the day before your daughter's wedding, right. Just in case that happens. And unfortunately, if that were to happen, a surgery would be required to repair it. Mm-hmm. So.
260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. It looks like we have Alyssa on line one. Welcome to Health 360.
Hi. My grandmother passed away from colon cancer before I was born. I'm not sure how old she was, but I wanted to know how strong of a family history it is for a grandparent to have had the disease and versus, you know, an immediate parent.
That's an excellent question. The risk factor is higher if it's a parent or a sibling or a child, so first-degree relatives. But certainly if there's a grandparent or perhaps an aunt or an uncle, then we usually tell folks, consider getting screening every 5 years. The other very important thing to keep in mind is your parents probably got colonoscopies because of your grandparents' history. And so we often don't talk about this at Thanksgiving dinner, but was a polyp removed? That person may have avoided a cancer because they got screening and detection, and they may have gotten a cancer had it not been detected earlier. So take into account your family members who have had colon polyps removed and put them into that number of possibly having had a colon cancer when you're thinking about your family history.
Okay. So you could be, just because your parents haven't had colon cancer, you could still be kind of in that danger zone because they took the precautions that they needed to because their immediate family had it.
Exactly. So Okay. If they've had polyps removed, then they perhaps dodged the bullet. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't really skip a generation in that family.
Thanks for your question, Alyssa. Thanks so much. And if you have a question or a comment, 260-452-1185 is the number to call. Let's talk a little bit about some of the preventative measures that we can take, and screening, colonoscopies. What about diet, exercise? Do folks need to keep in mind in their younger years and to continue on into adulthood and later on in life to keep a healthy colon?
Absolutely. We talked about obesity being a risk factor, and we know that people who exercise have a much better outcome and a less chance of getting colon cancer. So you can never be too young to start on a healthy lifestyle and try and maintain a good healthy weight. And a lot of that has to do with the types of foods that we're eating as well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of concern that red meat can be a risk factor. And what I would say to people is everything in moderation. You know, if you eat red meat every day, then you're going to be at higher risk than the person who eats red meat once a week. Mm-hmm. There's some thought that vitamin D supplements, vitamin C supplements may help prevent colon cancer, and some of the anti-inflammatory medications like aspirin and something called Celebrex or Sulindac may also prevent colon cancer. But realize that those medications have their own risk factors with bleeding and ulcers. And so don't start any supplements without talking to a healthcare provider and making sure that, you know, starting something like that makes sense with your other history.
We need to take a quick break for the news here on Health 360 Midday Matters. But in the meantime, if you have a question or comment, you can write to us, middaymatters@nipr.fm, or post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or email us, or you can pick up the phone and give us a call, 260-452-1185. The time is 12:36, and we'll be back with more of Health 360 in just a few moments.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by PHP, offering a variety of health benefits and services for individuals, families, and businesses in Northern Indiana, including medical, dental, high deductible, administrative services, and more at phpni.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Sean Beter with WBOI News. A late winter storm has dumped heavy snow across northern Indiana, with Valparaiso picking up a foot of new snow as lesser amounts fell farther south. Hazardous driving conditions prompted many school districts to delay Wednesday's start of classes to allow crews time to clear the roadways. The National Weather Service reported that Fort Wayne received a record 9 inches of snow Tuesday, breaking the old record for the date of 2.2 inches set in 2005. Storm's snow bands had exited most of Indiana by 5 a.m. this morning, leaving moderate snowfall amounts of about 3 to 5 inches across central and north-central Indiana. Indianapolis received about 3.5 inches of snow at the city's main airport, while between 1 and 2 inches of snow fell on southern parts of the state. While local effects of the federal sequestration are yet to be seen, investors do not seem to be frightened by the economic impacts. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Dan Goldblatt reports, the Dow hit a record high on Tuesday, even though experts say investors have given up on the possibility that Congress and President Obama can compromise.
On Tuesday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average reached a record high of more than 14,250 points, indicating that investors are not very concerned the sequestration will negatively affect the U.S. economy. Srinivas Kama, chair of the finance department in the IU Kelley School of Business, says investors had little hopes of a last-minute compromise, but are well prepared for the sequestration cuts.
The markets are forward-looking, and they surely saw this game of chicken coming down to the end. And so I don't think you would have expected much of a reaction given this. The preponderance of expectation was that this would happen.
Kama says though the markets are doing well, the U.S. unemployment rate remains high and will likely remain that way until Congress can begin working together. While many government employees and contractors will see an immediate impact on the sequestration, lower-income Americans who rely on government assistance will be spared the spending cuts. IU School of Public and Environmental Affairs professor Leslie Lankowski says while some nonprofits could see a decrease in federal funding, many are more worried changes to the nation's charitable tax deduction structure could hurt donations.
It'll be felt particularly by organizations that depend a lot on charitable giving. So the nonprofit sector is very concerned.
In southern Indiana, defense contractors say they are taking a wait-and-see attitude towards the sequestration, but hope for a solution sooner rather than later. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Dan Goldblatt.
And an Indiana agency has approved funding for the proposed conversion of a 108-year-old industrial building into shops and apartments in downtown Fort Wayne. The Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority recently approved tax credits for the Randall Building at nearly $675,000 annually for 10 years. The structure is the largest Victorian commercial block left in Fort Wayne, and the renovation is expected to cost about $7.5 million, with the city contributing $600,000 in federal funds. Commercial space will be on the ground floor of the building, and one- and two-bedroom apartments will fill four floors above. Real America Development's target tenants are people who earn less than 60% of the median income. Construction is set to begin later this year. You're listening to Midday Matters Health 360 on WBOI.
Welcome back to Health 360 here on WBOI. The time is 12:40. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Midday Matters Facebook page or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. We've been talking about the colon the past hour, and to do that, we have our guest, Dr. Nadine Floyd, who is helping us answer your questions and comments about colon cancer, signs, symptoms, and general health of the colon. We've been focusing the latest part of our conversation on diet, and we were talking a little bit during the break about gluten and going gluten-free, which is kind of what everyone seems to be doing right now. How does that affect the colon? Is that good for the colon?
Well, in general, being gluten-free, I think, is not unhealthy. I think that there's a lot of good things about it. But what often happens is people stop eating whole wheat and wheat-containing products, and then they don't get enough fiber. And what you have to realize is if you're going to go gluten-free, you have to switch. You have to switch your thinking to other whole grains, quinoa, brown rice, things like that. But then adding more leafy vegetables and fresh fruits. And you've probably heard me say that a couple times now this hour. But you just have to replace what you used to eat in calories with your whole wheat to other sources of fiber that will continue to kind of sweep things through and keep things moving.
Okay. We had a listener write in and ask, if you don't have pain when you have polyps, then why do you have pain when you have
diverticulitis. We practiced on the break.
Okay, what is diverticulitis for folks that don't know?
So diverticulitis is inflammation or infection of the bowel. It is not usually cancer, but it's very common. About 80% of Americans over the age of 60 have what's called diverticulosis. These are small pockets that form on the colon because we don't eat enough fiber. Back to that theme again. But what will happen is sometimes those sections of the bowel that are affected by this will become inflamed. And the reason why removing a polyp is not painful is because it's the inner lining of the bowel. But when you have inflammation, it affects the full thickness of the lining of the bowel. So the inner lining and the middle lining and the outside of the bowel becomes red and inflamed just like any place else. And that hurts. Mm-hmm. And so that's why people have pain when that's inflamed.
Let's focus a little bit on the surgical aspect of colon cancer and the treatment side of that. When is surgery an appropriate step to take?
Anybody who has curable disease or has symptoms that are affecting the quality of their life should have surgery on their bowel for cancer. Typically speaking, we remove the section of the bowel that has the cancer in it, as well as the blood supply and the lymph nodes that drain that section of the bowel. The colon is about 6 feet long, mm-hmm. and some parts of the colon and the rectum specifically are much closer to the exit where our muscles are. And so we will often approach treatment for the lower bowel or the rectum differently than we will for the more proximal or upper part of the bowel. But the general principle is we remove the bowel, the whole section with a little bit of room on each side, as well as the lymph nodes and the blood supply that drain it. And then in many situations, we can put the two ends back together, mm-hmm. so that things are in continuity. And then for those folks where the cancer occurs very close to the exit or the anus, those folks may end up with what's called a colostomy, where the stool is captured in a bag or an appliance that we attach to the skin on the abdominal wall. So we bring the bowel out through the belly, and then the stool drains into a bag.
We're going to continue and finish that part of the conversation, but I want to head over to the phone lines real quick. We have Max with a comment. Max, welcome to Health 360.
Thank you. I want to say that I was listening to the show and then realized that Nadine Floyd was the one talking.
Hi, Max.
You know who I am?
I do. I recognize your voice.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to say that if people out there are listening or like I was, I put it off and put it off. My first colonoscopy, I was going on 70, and that was too big a risk to have taken. I started having blood in my stool, which really worried me. So I called the doctor and we went after the procedure, and turned out that the blood was not as scary as it should have been. It was, or could have been. It was hemorrhoids, which I didn't know were bleeding. And but nevertheless, I had a colonoscopy. She found two polyps. One was had cancer cells in it. The other was not. She removed one and took about 10 inches of my colon out in a subsequent surgery. But I would just encourage people, if you see blood in your stool or whatever, if you're approaching the age where you should have them, have a colonoscopy. It doesn't hurt. It's just disregard your modesty and let it happen. It sure worked for me. I appreciate what you did.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks for calling in. Words of encouragement to go get yourself checked out with a colonoscopy, whether you're of age to do that around 50 or if you have a family history. Thank you for calling, Max. We have Michael on line two. Michael, welcome to Health 360 Midday Matters.
Thank you very much. I have a question for Dr. Floyd. Just give you a quick profile. I'm a 31-year-old male. 5'11", 172 pounds, you know, 12% body fat. So a very fit individual and adhere to a pretty strict diet. Late 20s, I actually had a little bit of rectal bleeding, and I had a colleague and a friend who I worked out with who kind of turned me onto the paleo diet. And I cut out all grains, and that bleeding has ceased. And I haven't seen any signs of it for a couple of years. A, can you kind of discuss what you know about the impact of that diet upon colon health? And B, is that anything I need to worry about going forward since that has ceased?
I think as long as the bleeding has stopped, it probably is not anything to be concerned about. But, you know, anybody out there, if the bleeding doesn't go away with a change in diet, and I realize you're only 31, but anybody out there who it doesn't stop bleeding, you should get it investigated. With regard to the paleo diet, I'm not an expert on this, but again, the idea is that you do more of the vegetables and the fruits and nuts, which are high in omega-3s and, mm-hmm. and lean meats, and less of the grains and the flour. And so I don't think that this is bad for the colon. I think it's good for it. Can I tell you whether there's data out there saying that paleo diet people have less colon cancer than, you know, McDonald's diet people. Sorry, McDonald's, probably get in trouble for that. I can't, but you know, I do think that at this point it's a healthy approach. And realize that, you know, in this gentleman's situation, he's a fit guy. There can be other reasons for bleeding, and hemorrhoids can be triggered not only by the quality of the stool, but the physical activity as well. So you know, it's a two-handed mm-hmm. issue for that particular person. Mm-hmm. So.
But and any, of course, any issues or concern, best to head over to your doctor and have them check you out.
Yeah, you know, and on that note, of my 30-year-old patients, we often think it's a hemorrhoid and we ignore it. Mm. And so, you know, I don't want to panic everybody. It usually is a hemorrhoid when you're 30. But, you know, those are the young patients who, you know, we feel it a little more emotionally because, you know, it was usually something that was ignored for a few months or a few years even. So,
question or comment? 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah DeLia, joined in the studio this afternoon with Dr. Nadine Floyd, who is helping me answer questions and comments about the colon cancer, the signs, symptoms, and treatment. And we have Andrea on line three, actually, who has a question about colon cancer. Andrea, welcome to Health 360 Midday Matters.
Hi, thank you. I have a question for Dr. Floyd about what exactly is colon cancer. My family is divided. My father passed away at age 48 from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and when it was found initially, it was found in his colon. And the division in the family comes from part of my family says, oh, that is colon cancer, and we should follow the guidelines for colonoscopies and such for colon cancer. And I'm saying, well, my doctor is telling me, no, it's the point of origin of the cancer, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is not necessarily a colon cancer. So I'm hoping you can help shed some light on that.
Well, Andrea, you're going to win this one. Colon cancer typically is thought to start in the lining of the bowel. With lymphoma, whether it's non-Hodgkin's or any of the other lymphomas, it starts in a lymph node, but lymph nodes are everywhere. And so we can see lymphoma in the colon or in the small bowel or anywhere in the entire body. So in your grandfather's particular situation, he had lymphoma that happened to pop up in his bowel first. And it may have been in other areas as well. You may need to follow different screening purposes just because of your family history of having a cancer. But I would not lump this into the colon cancer type. Now, this, of course, is all assuming that the family has the right information about the pathology. And it sounds like they're a knowledgeable family if they know all that. But, you know, oftentimes we don't know what kind of cancer, you know, great aunt so-and-so had when she died. We just know it was somewhere in the belly or it spread to the liver or it spread to the lung. And so often understanding what kind it is helpful, but sometimes we just don't have that information.
Irene is on line 5 who has a question about the colon and diet. Irene, welcome to Health 360 Midday Matters.
Thank you. Doctor had mentioned increasing foods with omega-3s, and I've been reading more about using omega-3 supplements, and it seems that the omega-3 supplements come in either fish or algal origin, and I just wondered if the doctor thinks one is more desirable than the other from a colon standpoint.
Strictly speaking, no. You do need to worry about the source of the fish oil because some people are concerned about mercury and other types of contaminants. So read the labels. I can't tell you how accurate the labels are. There's a lot of discussion about how these are sort of monitored by the different agencies. But I think if it comes from a healthy fish source, that's fine. If you're vegan or don't want to take the risk of that, then I think the vegetable sources are fine as well. And then what I would say is that all of these supplements can have their GI side effects. So sometimes it can cause a little bit of looseness to the bowels. And so if you're noticing that things are changing, you might want to alter the time of day that you take the supplements or back off on the supplements, because occasionally I will see folks who are on all these wonderful health supplements and can't figure out why their bowels are misbehaving. And it can be, you know, other ways of doing it are, you know, eating more seafood, which is not always easy when you live in the Midwest, at least the healthy stuff, but you can get good frozen fish at the supermarkets. And there are other vegetables as well that have omegas in them. Flaxseed is very good. Chia seeds are very good. I'm sure I'm forgetting a few, but
great. And Irene, thank you so much for your call. We have just about 6 minutes left in today's program. So if you have a question, feel free to write in middaymattersnipr.fm, or you can post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters. And thanks so much to all of our callers that we've had so far in today's conversation. I want to ask, when we just have a few more moments left in today's program, if we can spend some time discussing the difference between colon cancer and rectal cancer, which I wonder if folks come into your office sometimes and they kind of use the two terms interchangeably, if there's confusion that of the distinction of the two.
Technically speaking, the rectum is sort of part of the colon, but it is the lower end of the colon, right before the exit and right before the anal area. This area tends to be fixed in the sense that it doesn't move around freely in the abdomen. It's, you know, behind the bladder in men and women, behind the uterus in women. And so it's sort of in a single location, whereas the other parts of the colon, if you've ever seen a diagram, you know, are up and there's a little bit of mobility up there. They are treated differently. Rectal cancer incidence, I believe, is somewhere between 40 and 50,000 a year in the United States, whereas colon cancer is greater than 100,000 cases a year. And part of that's because the colon is longer than the rectum. But I'll often have patients who I treat for rectal cancer say, my friends are giving me all kinds of advice. And what I'll say is that where it is located, whether it's in the colon or in the rectum, is going to make a difference in how it is approached. Typically speaking, we we do not radiate colon cancers. Mm. However, there are a fair number of people with advanced rectal cancer who may get radiation. And sometimes they'll even get chemotherapy and radiation before they'll even have surgery. So the location is key. And if it's in the lower, what we call 12 centimeters or 15 centimeters of the lower half foot of the colon, then that's considered the rectum. And you really need to have that worked up a little bit more specially because it is treated in different ways.
And just to tie up the conversation we were having before, we were discussing some of the surgeries that go hand in hand with colon cancer, and we talked a little bit about those. What patients that have had to undergo surgery for colon cancer, what are they looking at post-surgery and in their day-to-day life?
Well, first of all, we should mention that a lot of these surgeries can be performed laparoscopically. Mm. Now, every patient's story is going to be a little bit different. Whether they've had prior surgery or whether they have a blockage or obstruction could really make doing it laparoscopically difficult. So the traditional way of a big incision is still more common, but we're seeing more and more patients who qualify and are getting laparoscopic surgery. So they're small incisions, and the healing process afterwards is much faster for these patients. That being said, the healing process on the inside is still the same, and the surgery on the inside is still the same. Many people will notice that their bowels change a little bit after surgery, but usually within a few months, they kind of go back to normal, or they sort of find a new normal, which is usually, you know, not life-altering for most people. And so what I usually tell my folks is you're going to be tired, whether it's a little incision or a big incision, for several weeks after surgery. You may need more therapy afterwards, depending on the stage of the cancer. So they may need chemotherapy and things like that. But in general, they should be able to get back to a normal lifestyle. Even those who need a colostomy can go back to work. I have a patient who rides his Harley every summer across the country, and I salute that because they don't let something like a colostomy slow them down. And so everybody can have a normal life afterwards once we treat it and beat it.
And just to follow up on polyps that are removed, is there any, you know, what's the follow up for folks that have walk into the doctors one day, or not the doctors, but to the hospital, get a colonoscopy, have polyps removed? What's their next day and days after going to look like?
Most people get back to normal the next day. And so they usually have no idea that they've just had a procedure, except for they all say they lost a few pounds with the bowel prep. regarding when they should come back for colonoscopy, you really need to depend on the doctor who did the procedure to guide you. Some polyps are very small and not worrisome. Some are larger and may even have very aggressive features to them. So one person may be told come back in 5 years, but another person may be told to come back in 6 to 12 months. And if that is the advice you're getting, that means that you had a worrisome polyp and you need to be closely watched.
We have just about a minute and a half left in today's program, and I want to give you the final word. Any final advice for folks concerned about keeping their colon healthy and happy?
Well, just a plug for American Cancer Society and the fact that this is March, which is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. So if people are seeing signs out there, you know, as I hope this show has shown, it's not that awful to talk about. It's really not something to be shy about. As my former patient said, don't be embarrassed. Go out there and just make sure you're healthy. And if you're not having symptoms, you're the perfect person for screening, because we don't want you to get symptoms and then have a problem.
Dr. Nadine Floyd, thank you so much for joining Health 360 today. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1 and streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. Thanks very much for all the callers and listeners during today's program. This episode of Midday Matters will be podcasted by the end of the day and available at nipr.fm. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.